Chazor Hashem Sechs Peil Perek Aleph Mishnah Dalad until Perek Dalad Mishnah Aleph. The Mishnah gave five conditions for something to be obligated in Peah. Only something which is eaten under normal circumstances, it's properly edible and it's ripe enough to be eaten. Number two, it's protected by somebody, it's not ownerless. Number three, it grows from the ground and gains nourishment from the ground. Number four, the entire field ripens and is harvested at the same time. So not something like a fig tree where the figs are collected as they ripen. And finally, they're able to be stored for a long time, which excludes many type of vegetables. Only something which has all five of those qualities, such as the five main grains and beans, only that will be obligated in Peah. Only that is considered Katsir, which is what the Torah says is obligated in Peah. Mishnah Hay brought examples of certain trees which have these five qualities, and therefore they are obligated in Peah. And in Mishnah Vov we learned that even though ideally one has to separate Peah and leave it attached to the ground, if one harvested his entire field and didn't leave any of it attached to the ground, then he still has the mitzvah of Peah from the produce which has now been detached from the ground. However, if he leaves it until the stage of Meruach, where the pile of grain is smoothed over, that's considered the last stage of the whole process of harvesting. Once it's reached that stage, then all the produce becomes obligated in Maaseres. There are the tithes which one has to give. So in that case, he would have to separate Maaseres and only then take Peah. And the Mishnah then gave another five examples of where this plays out. That up to the stage of Meruach, the produce would be exempt from Maaseres. But once it's reached that stage, then they only need to separate Maaseres. So for example, the owner could make his property, his produce, ownerless. And then it will be exempt from Trumas and Maaseres. But if he only does so after the Meruach stage, then he's obligated to take Maaseres. Once the obligation is set in, then it lasts. Secondly, one is able to feed his animals, even fixed meals, up to the stage of Meruach. And after that, he can only feed them temporary snacks, and he himself can't eat it at all. Number three, according to Rabbi Akiva, one is obligated to take Maaseres for produce which he replants in the ground if he replants them after Meruach. But if he replants the produce before Meruach, then according to Rabbi Akiva, who is the opinion mentioned in our Mishnah, he would not need to take Trumas and Maaseres. The fourth application of this was a Kohen or a Levi who buys the produce from the farmer before or after Meruach. Now, even though technically a Kohen could take the Truma and the Maaserishin for himself, and a Levi could at least take the Maaserishin for himself, they're actually forbidden to do so. And this was to prevent the wealthy Kohanim from doing a deal with the farmers, where they would pay them more than they would end up getting usually had they taken Trumas and Maaseres. So usually the owner has to take off 10% for Maaserishin, and another 2% or so for Truma, so he'd only end up with 88% left. So the wealthy Kohanim might do a deal and say, we'll pay you the price of 95% of your produce, and they'll both gain that way. The farmer will get more money than he would have, and the Kohen also only has to pay 95%, yet he can keep 100% of the produce. But if this were to occur, then the wealthy Kohanim would have a huge advantage over the less wealthy Kohanim. And so Majabonon, if the Kohen or Levi buys the produce after the stage of Meruach, they can't keep the Truma and Maaseres for themselves, rather they'll have to give the Truma and Maaseres to different Kohanim and Leviim. The reason why this doesn't apply before Meruach is just because that's uncommon for people to buy the produce at that stage, and therefore Majabonon, they did not make this decree include the uncommon case of somebody buying the produce before Meruach. And finally, we said that if somebody makes his field hekdesh, meaning he designates it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then later on he redeems it, which means he pays money to the Beis HaMikdash, and then takes the field back, so it all depends on Meruach. If it belonged to hekdesh at the stage of Meruach, and the gizbar, the Beis HaMikdash treasurer, the manager, he did the Meruach, then it will be exempt, because hekdesh property is exempt from Trumas and Maaseres. But if the farmer did Meruach, it belonged to him at that stage, then he would be obligated in Trumas and Maaseres. A large part of the second perek discussed different separations within a field and how many payos are necessary to be taken. The Torah's obligation of payah is on each field, so one cannot leave one big corner in one field on behalf of lots of different fields, because the Torah says that you have to separate payah for each field independently of the other fields. So we listed what would be considered a separation, even within one big field, that halachically we would view the field as two or three different fields. So a river, or a pathway, or a road, or an area of land which is left totally unplanted, or a strip of land which was ploughed, or a strip of land which is planted with a different species than the rest of the field. That's also a separation. And then we had a machlekes about somebody who cuts down part of his field for the sake of animal food. So country mayor, since it's harvested for a totally different purpose to the rest of the field, which is being harvested for the human consumption, we therefore do not view it as the beginning of the harvest of the entire field, because it's totally different, and therefore that would be a separation between the two sides of the field. However, the Chachom view this as the beginning of really an extended harvest of the entire field, so it is not considered a separation, and the farmer would take one payah for the entire field. In Mishnah Beis, we saw that when it comes to a canal of water going through a field, it's actually a machlokes as to whether that is a separation. According to the Tanakhama of the previous Mishnah, it's always considered a separation, but according to Yehuda, it's only a separation if it's large enough, if it's wide enough, that you're not able to harvest produce on one side of the canal in the same action as the other side. You can't sort of stand in the middle and harvest both sides in one movement. So if it's that wide, only then would it be a separation, but otherwise it wouldn't be. Now when it comes to mounds which are in the field, even if they're harvested in a different way, using a hoe as opposed to a animal pulling the plow, it's still clear that it's part of the same harvest. Even if it's done in a different way, someone who's looking at the field can clearly see that it's going to be harvested as part of this big harvest, and therefore it's not considered a separate part of the field, so the owner would take payah for the entire field in one go, including this mound. Mishnah Gimel, all of the separations which we mentioned until now, that's for crop which goes directly on the ground. But when it comes to trees, the only thing which makes a significant separation would be a fence which is at least 10 tefachim high. And as well as having a fence, the branches of the trees cannot intermingle and interlock. Because if they do, then the fence is useless. It's still not considered separation, because the trees are clearly mixing together, and therefore he would take one payah in that situation, unless they're divided by a wall or a fence, and the branches do not reach each other. Mishnah Daled, when it comes to massive carob trees, these are so big, and also they were often planted quite far away from each other. So as long as one carob tree is within sight of another carob tree, we view that as the same field, as it were. So Rambam would take one payah on behalf of both of them, and Rambam Gamliel testified that that's indeed what the custom of his father's house was when it came to carob trees, and when it came to olive trees, they took it a step further. And any olive tree in that part of the town, they would split the town into, let's say, four sections. So all olive trees in that section were viewed as one field, so required just one payah. We explained the reason could be because they shared the olive press. Then Rabbi Eliezer ben Tzedek said that actually he heard a slightly different version from Rambam Gamliel, that when it came to carob trees, it wasn't just the ones which could be in sight of one another, but every carob tree in the entire city was viewed as one field and required just one payah. Mishnah Hay, two species are always considered two different fields, irrelevant of how many times you harvest it, if you harvest the first half at a different occasion to the other half. Two species is two fields and therefore requires two different payahs. At the same time, if you have one type of produce, you only take one payah even if you harvest one half at a different occasion to the other half. Now what happens if you have two types of the same species? For example, two different types of wheat. So then it depends on when you harvest it. If you harvest it all at once, so you're viewing it as wheat. You're viewing it all as the same, and therefore you only need to take one payah. But if you harvest one type of wheat on one occasion, and you harvest the other type of wheat separately, then we view it as two separate species, and therefore it would require two separate payahs. And Mishnah Vav supported this with a story, where Rabbi Shimon Ish HaMitzvah asked Rabbi Gamliel about this case, and they went to the Lishkas Sagozis, which was the chamber where the Sanhedrin sat in the Beit HaMikdash, and Nachum HaLavlar said that he has a tradition, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, about this halacha of two types of the same species. Mishnah Zayin, the obligation of payah sets in at the end of a person's harvest. Now the Torah says you're obligated in payah when, over kutzuchem, when you harvest, which means that if produce is detached from the ground by some other means or by some other person, then you're exempt. So if non-Jews or robbers harvest the field without your permission, or if ants chewed it and that's why it fell off, or if the wind blew the stalks down, or an animal, so he'll be exempt from payah, because he did not harvest the field. Furthermore, if he cuts the first half of the field, then at the second half of the field, he didn't harvest, the non-Jews, for example, did, for their own need. In that case, once again, he is exempt, because the obligation sets in at the second half, at the end of the harvesting. But Mishnah Ches told us if it was the other way around, that the non-Jews cut the first half, and he did the second half, so he is obligated to separate payah, but only for the half which he harvested. The first half is totally exempt. Now, if he harvests half of the field and then sells the other half, and the buyer ends up finishing the harvest, so the buyer is obligated to separate payoff for the entire field. And this is more because of the laws of selling, meaning it was an assumed part of the deal, that since in general payoff is taken from the end, it was assumed that he wasn't really paying him the payer. The payer wasn't included in the sale. So since the buyer is taking the entire field, yet he has no right to the payer, so he is the one who needs to separate part of that field and leave it as payoff for the poor. And in a similar vein, if the owner harvested the first half of the field and then made the second half hektish, so whoever redeems the field from hektish, he is basically considered the buyer. So just like in the previous case, the buyer gave payoff for the entire thing, so to here, the person who redeemed it from hektish is effectively buying it, and therefore once he harvests the second half of the field, he'll need to separate payoff for the entire field. Perigimel, if there are lots of olive trees in a field, and among the olive trees there's also patches of grain planted there. So if there are large gaps between the trees, and nevertheless, the patches of grain are still in patches, they're not planted continuously throughout the field, then it's clear that the owner planted them as separate, distinct fields. Because he could have planted them continuously, because there are such large gaps between the trees. But he didn't really plant in between the trees. So it's clear that he is separating out the patches, and therefore views them as different fields, and therefore they would require different individual payos for each patch. On the other hand, if the gaps between the trees are very small, then you can't assume that the reason why he didn't plant them continuously is because he views all of these as different fields. It's just because there wasn't enough room there. It wasn't practical to plant in between the trees. Our Mishnah Bura Machlekes, in a situation where the gap between each tree wasn't so large, but it wasn't so small. Yerushalmi explains how much it was exactly, but according to Beis Shammai, he has to give payoff from each individual patch, because he says that the owner could have planted it continuously, and the fact that he didn't shows that he views these as separate fields. However, Beis Hillel say that no, since the gap at the end of the day was quite small, it wasn't practical to plant in between there. So the reason why he planted the grain in patches is not to show that they're different fields. It's just because that was the practical place to plant them, and therefore he can take one payah on behalf of all of the grain in that field. Now, Beis Shammai agree that if grain from one patch was leaning over and it got a bit mixed and intermingled with grain leaning over from another patch, so then they're so close together that even according to Beis Shammai, we would view that as one field, and therefore it would require only one payah. Mishnah Beis, if somebody starts plucking parts of his field, the parts which are ripe, and he leaves in the ground the parts which are not yet ripe. So according to Rabbi Akiva, since at the time that you harvested the first ones, the later ones were not yet ready to come out of the ground, that makes them two different harvests, and therefore the areas which have been harvested are separations. So you'll need to take payah from each part of the later harvest by itself. But the Chacham hold that even though the harvest for the later ones was not yet ready at the time of the harvest of the earlier ones, it's still very clear that it's all part of the same field, and this is just the way how he harvests it. But according to the Chacham, we view it as one extended field, and therefore it requires just one payah. Now the Chachom agree that in a case such as mustard seeds, these were often planted in patches, not as one big field. So if somebody did plant it as one big field, but then he plucked parts of it, in that case we don't view it all as one extended harvest, because it doesn't look like that, because mustard is usually planted in patches. So somebody who sees the field with half of the field already plucked, they'll view the rest of it as different patches, because that's how it's normally planted. And therefore the Chachom agree in that case that you would have to give payah independently from each patch. Mishnah Gimel. Now, if you harvest the field at two different occasions and for two different purposes, meaning the ones you harvest earlier, they're fresher and you want to sell them in the marketplace, whereas the ones you leave in the ground for longer, they get drier and they'll last for longer and you want to store them. So in that case, they've got totally different purposes, and they're being harvested at two different occasions, and therefore you would give two separate payers from each part. We then came across a process called meidel. Meidel is where the crop is planted too tightly packed together, so the farmer plucks part of the produce in order to give more room for the rest of the produce to grow properly. The halacha is that the parts which were plucked earlier do not require payer at all, because firstly, they're usually not ripe enough anyway at that stage, and secondly, they're only being harvested for the sake of the other things. So it's not considered a proper harvest, which is obligated in payah. Now, going back to the first case of our Mishnah, where you harvest two different things for two different purposes, even if there are two different purposes, if you pluck them both at the same time, so you pluck some crop which you're going to sell in the marketplace, and some which you're going to store, but you do it at one go, then you can give one payer, because you're clearly not separating them out, and therefore whatever you pluck last, you would give payer from that on behalf of all of it. Mishnah Dalet, according to the Tanakhama, onions which are planted and left in the ground for a very long time, and their purpose is just to produce onion seeds, and the onion itself is barely edible, according to the Tanakhama, it is still chayv in payer, because technically it is edible, but Rabbi Yosi says no. You're exempt because by the time you will pluck it, it's not really edible anymore. Even if it was edible, it's not really edible anymore, certainly not in a normal circumstance, and therefore it is exempt from payah. Now, if you have a field planted with vegetables, and among the vegetables there are also onions, so according to Rabbi Yosi, you have to leave payah for each part of the onions individually. Because since onions are not generally planted in a vegetable field, the vegetables are a separation between the onions. However, according to the Chachamim, since the vegetables which we're talking about are exempt from payah, they're considered secondary to the onions. So we view them as if they're not there. And therefore they are not a separation, so you can take one payah for all of the onions. Mishnah Hey, if two brothers inherit something, a field, and the same would apply to any partners, if they take separate parts of the field each, then they have to take separate payahs. The obligation of payah is on your field, in the singular. But if they join together and they jointly own the entire field, then they are obligated in payah, because that's considered one field, and the Torah also says, when you harvest in the plural. So if you are partners, then you would take one payah. Similarly, if two people buy a tree, so if they both own the entire tree, then they're obligated in one payah. But if one person took one half of the tree and the other took the other half, then they have to take payah separately. Now, if somebody sells young trees in his field, and the buyer is going to take them and replant them elsewhere, but before he does so, he wants to harvest them. Now, since he only owns the trees, but not the land in between the trees, there's no way to combine the trees and view them as one field, because he doesn't own what's in between the trees. And therefore he has to separate payah from each tree individually. And Rabbi Huda explained that there's an exception. If the seller didn't sell him all of the trees, rather, he started the harvest, so he harvested a couple of trees, and then he sold the rest of the trees to the buyer. Since he started the harvest, so the payah obligation was already applicable to him. And therefore he can't remove that obligation by selling the rest of them. And therefore it will be the seller who would have to separate payah for all of them. Mishnah Vav, we had five opinions for the minimum size of land, which is chayv in payah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, it's the size of a beis roiva, where you can plant a quarter of a kav of seeds in the field. And he learns this from the halachas of kilayim, where you mix two seeds together. According to Rabbi Yeshua, it's a field which will produce two sa'ah of produce. He learns this from Shikha, where you forget produce in the field. Rabbi Tarfin says, it's an area of 6x6 tefachim. He also learns this from kilayim, but a different part of kilayim. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, it's got to be large enough that it requires two actions of harvesting. So there's a start and an end. So then the end is the payah. But if it's just one act, then there's no start and end. So payah wouldn't make sense. And the Mishnah said, interestingly, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Although we explained that that's not necessarily true, because we don't necessarily decide halacha based on the Mishnah. And then we brought the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who holds that any amount of land is obligated in payah, and also Bikurim, the first fruits which you bring to the Beis HaMikdash, and also when it comes to writing a Prusbol, which is a document written to prevent one's loans being cancelled in the year of Shemitah, it requires land, but any amount of land is sufficient. And one last thing for which any amount of land is sufficient is when it comes to movable items, even though usually in order to acquire a movable item, one needs to lift it up or bring it towards him, if he is acquiring it with land, then if he does an act of acquisition on the land, then that acquires the movable items together with the land. So any amount of land is enough that if you do an acquisition on that, you can acquire the movable items together with that. Mishnah Zayin, a shechiv merah, who is somebody on their deathbed about to die, midrabbanan, although in general one needs to perform an action in order to acquire something, when it comes to shechiv merah, so that he doesn't get anxious and die sooner, just by him instructing that a certain property should go to somebody, the ownership is transferred automatically. Now, if he does an act of acquisition after instructing that the property should go to somebody, we could view that as replacing the speech, so now it's a proper act of acquisition, or it could just be making it official, but the acquisition remains as the speech. And the difference between these two is if he recovers and lives. So the Mishnah told us that if he gave away all of his property, then one would only do that if he thinks he's about to die. And therefore a condition of the transfer of ownership was his death, so if he doesn't die, then it will be invalid. So in that scenario, we view the act just as making it official. But if he leaves over part of his property, then it could very well be that he wanted to give a gift to this person, not solely based on his death. And therefore we view the action as replacing the speech, which means that if he recovers, the transfer of ownership will still be valid, and he cannot reclaim his property. Next, if a man marries a woman, he needs to write a document called a ksuba, in which he promises to give her a certain amount of money if he dies or divorces her. And she can collect that value of the ksuba from his land.
Now, if this person, who is a shechiv mara, writes or instructs that his land should be given to his sons, and he instructed that a tiny amount of land should go to his wife, but the amount of land which he's giving the wife is less than the value of her kasuba. The halacha is that if she is quiet and she doesn't protest, then we view this as acceptance that she is happy for the rest of the property to go to the sons, even though she'll end up getting less money for her kasuba, or she'll possibly end up getting less. And this is known as shesika kaida'a, that we view her silence as an acceptance, as agreeing to what he just did. Now, according to Yossi, even if she just accepted this without the husband writing her any property, even in that scenario, if she is quiet and she doesn't protest, we view that as an acceptance, and she will not be able to collect her kasuba from that property. Mishnah Ches, since a non-Jewish slave, an Eved Kanani, is considered the possession of his master, if somebody says to his slave, I'm giving you all of my property, included in all of his property is the slave himself, so he's giving the slave himself, which means he's allowing him to go free, and therefore the slave would indeed go free in that scenario. However, if the master leaves a bit of the property back for himself, and he doesn't give everything over to the slave, in that scenario we don't interpret his words as freeing the slave, because clearly he does want to leave some of the property for himself, so perhaps he wants to keep the slave for himself as well, and therefore the slave does not go free. However, according to Rabbi Shimon, he does go free, and the only scenario where he would not go free is if the master said, I'm giving you all of my property, except for 1/10,000 of the property. So we're not sure which 1/10,000 he's referring to, and it could be that that 1/10,000 is referring to the slave or part of the slave. Either way, the slave cannot go free unless his entire self is freed indefinitely. Now, the first mission of Perek Dalad states that in general, peel is given while it is still attached to the ground. The mitzvah is not to harvest the end of the field. However, when it comes to certain plants, such as dolis, which is a vine which grows on top of things and around things, as well as palm trees, and according to Rabbi Shimon, even nut trees which are very smooth, and in all these scenarios, it will be dangerous for poor people to compete over who gets the payoff first. And therefore, in these scenarios, the farmer or a representative of the farmer would actually bring the produce down himself and give it out equally to all the poor people present. Now, in general, if all the poor people present say that they want the owner to give the payout out equally, they can. But if one person says that, no, I want to do it in the normal way of first come, first serve, and we should go and grab it ourselves, then he has the right to do so, since that is the normal way of doing things.